Greetings, and welcome to the KOL call on mastocytosis hosted by AB Sciences. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If you would like to ask a question, you may press star one on your telephone keypad. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Alan Moussy, CEO of AB Sciences. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, and good afternoon and good morning to the participants. My name is Alan Moussy. I'm the CEO of AB Science, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to this web conference to present to you the case of masitinib systemic mastocytosis. I will move to you slide by slide. So I disclaim, of course, the usual disclaimers in any presentation, and the agenda will be structured in different parts today. We will introduce the participants, well, we will give you the current results with indolent systemic mastocytosis. Then we will explain the design of the confirmatory study, and then we will give a tribute to the KOL who are joining us during the call, and then you will have the opportunity.
Hello, here is Peter Wallen speaking, Austria, Vienna.
Okay, so the next slide is the participants. So I will be
I cannot understand you, sorry. I cannot understand you.
Is it Peter? Yes, Peter, sorry. Welcome, Peter.
This is Peter Wallen from Austria, Vienna speaking. I cannot really understand you.
Please make sure when not speaking to keep your lines muted.
Yeah, Peter, put yourself on mute and we'll do the presentation and then you'll be able to deliver your speech. So I would like to continue. So the experts or the KOL present and joining the call are Jim Akin from Michigan University, Michel Arroc from in France École Normale Supérieure of Paris and Hôpital Pitié-Salpêtrière, Mariana Castle, who is a professor at Harvard Medical School, Olivier Hermine, who is a professor of hematology at René Descartes University in Paris, and Peter, who just joined us, and who is a professor at the Medical University of Vienna. Then I will leave Olivier Hermine, who is the scientific director of AB Science, to continue the presentation. Olivier, if you can take over.
Okay, so welcome everybody. So I will give you a good small introduction of mastocytosis. So on slide five, as you can see, mastocytosis is defined by the accumulation of mast cells. But because the disease is heterogeneous, there is a classification in which we split the disease in two parts, the aggressive disease with a short expectancy of life and the indolent disease, which do not decrease the expectancy of life but are associated with symptoms. And within the symptomatic disease, we call the cutaneous mastocytosis, representing 30% of the cases, and the indolent and smoldering mastocytosis, representing 60% of the mastocytosis. And we treat this group of patients. So what we found is that, in fact, although indolent or smoldering systemic mastocytosis do not decrease the life expectancy, they are associated with major symptoms which may impair significantly the quality of life of patients. And among these symptoms, we found that cognitive impairment and depression are prominent features of the disease, and we have shown clearly that some molecular explanation to explain this cognitive impairment and depression in this patient, and we have shown in a small phase 2 study that masitinib improve significantly this depression and cognitive impairment of these patients. So what is masitinib? Masitinib is a selective kinase inhibitor that target mast cells and also macrophages and macroglia, which are important cells in the brain to explain some of the disturbances that we can see in the patient. So masitinib by blocking c-KIT and also downstream kinases, including lean and fin, may block significantly the mast cell activation. And by blocking MCSF, it may block also the microglia activation that we can see sometimes in some patients. And interestingly, masitinib is one of the most highly selective kinase inhibitors because it does not block very few other kinases except KIT, lean, fin, and MCSFR. In contrast, we did find that masitinib doesn't block the H16Z mutations, which is the most frequent mutation found in patients in mastocytosis. However, next slide, slide 8, because it does block the wild-type KIT and fin and lean, it may block the activation and release of mediator of mast cells, which are responsible of the symptoms that the patients experience in mastocytosis. Next slide, on slide 9. So, masitinib, because it is a highly potent and selective kinase inhibitor, has been used in several diseases, with in most of the cases, the same concept to block the mast cells, and has been used in oncology indication, but also because of its safety profile in non-oncology indication. And as you can see on the slide 9, there is at least now 6,000 patients who have been treated with these drugs, and we know clearly is a safety profile. So the clinical development of masitinib to block mast cell activation has started with in mastocytosis, and we have finished two phase 2A studies in which we evaluate the effect of the treatment not only on the clinical symptoms, but mostly on the symptoms of the patient, including some specific symptoms of mastocytosis, like pruritus, flush, but also the depression, which is assessed by the Hamilton score, and also the fatigue impact scale, which are important parameters for this patient. So we finished two phase 2 A study, and also a randomized phase 3 study, which was very important to be performed because we need a placebo to show clearly that the drug is working. When you look at the results on slide 11, it's interesting to see in the two phase 2, the first one included patients not bearing the H16 mutation, which represents less than 5% of the overall population of patients with mastocytosis, and we did see in this population a reduction of flush by 64% and pruritus by 36% and depression by 43%. So at 3 months, it seemed that the drug was working. And then we moved to the A16 population, which is the most frequent population of patients with mastocytosis, because as I said before, we block the activation, and very interestingly, we did see the same result in this patient, and we see a reduction of flush, pruritus, depression, and fatigue between 40 to 60% reduction. And in addition, we could see also an improvement of the quality of life of these patients. So based on these two phase 2 studies, we perform an extension of this patient because some of these patients experience a very good response, and 60% of the patients still pursue the treatment after 1 year, and at 5 years, still 45% of the patients are still taking masitinib now with the long term, and we can assess a very good safety profile with a long follow-up in this patient with phase 2A. So we can see here some patients experience after a long period of time a reduction of the skin involvement, and you see clearly here a decrease of the erythematous lesions and also decrease of the pigmentation of the characteristic lesion of urticaria pigmentosa in this patient, you see after 7 years of treatment. So here it is an interesting data on the slide 14 in which we show an improvement of ASL IRM, which means that we improve the perfusion of the brain of this patient who was severely impaired with cognitive dysfunction and depression. And while he was increasing and improving his brain perfusion, his symptoms also improved in this patient. So here we show that masitinib, by blocking mast cell activation and maybe to the less extent microglia activation, may improve the brain function of this patient. On slide 15, so what we did based on this two phase two positive study, we moved to a phase three randomized study, including 135 patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis. So the study design was a blinded placebo control masitinib versus placebo, randomization 1-to-1, and we started with a full dose of 6 milligrams per kilogram per day for this patient, and 135 patients with ISM were included. To be evaluable, this patient need to have severe symptoms of mastocytosis at baseline, including a pruritus score above 9, a number of flushes per week superior to 8, a depression score superior to 19, and asthenia with a score superior to 75. And all of these patients must have been unresponsive to optimal symptomatic treatment that we use in mastocytosis. The primary analysis was the number of cumulative response on the four handicaps between 8 weeks and 8-24. And we assess the response if the patient decreased by 75% in any of the four handicaps. And we did five assessments at 8 weeks, 12, 16, 20, and 24. So we use a complicated and complex statistical calculation of the p-value based on the generalized estimating equation model. So here are the results on slide 16. And as we can see, the pre-specified primary and secondary analysis on symptoms were positive and supported efficacy based on odds ratio. As you can see, on the primary analysis, a reduction of 75% of the scoring of the symptoms occurred in 18.7% in the masitinib arm versus 7% in the placebo, with the odds ratio of 3.63, which was highly significant. When we looked at the secondary analysis, including the reduction of 3-2 or pruritus, we can see the same kind of results with 24 in the masitinib versus 9, 27 versus 10, or 22 versus 7, which all were statistically significant. On slide 17, when we looked at objective marker of mast cell activation and also mast cell burden, you could see that we see a reduction in the tryptase by 18 points. When we see an increase in the placebo arm, we see a decrease of the urticaria pigmentosum extension in the patient with masitinib by 12 and an increase in the placebo by 15. And when we look at the Darye sign, which is a clinical symptom which is specific of mastocytosis due to mast cell activation, we could see disappearance in 20% of the patients versus only 2% in the placebo. All of this decrease of objective markers of mast cell activation were highly significant statistically. Now, when we look at the severe adverse event, which is an important parameter to analyze in this indolent disease, we do not occur any life-threatening toxicities, and the patient experienced two kinds of symptoms between 10 to 15%, including the gastrointestinal disorders, which occurred mainly at the beginning of the treatment and resolved usually with time. And also we did observe skin and subcutaneous tissue disorders, including rash in 5% of the cases, pruritus, drug eruption, and some erythema in the patient, but you see always around 2 to 3%. So the safety profile of this treatment was quite good for this indolent disease. So these results were published in the Lancet journal, which is one of the best medical journals in 2017, which show the result of this phase 3 study, which actually was the first perform in randomized session in indolent mastocytosis. So now we plan to do phase 3 confirmatory studies, and we will do maybe Alain, you want to talk to the study?
Yes, I can take over. Thank you, Olivier, the science behind masitinib and the results so far published in the Lancet, and then we can just speak about the future, which is the next study. So the next study has a design which is very close to the first study with some optimizations. We will test masitinib versus placebo at 6 mg per kg per day dose, randomized 1-to-1. And the main inclusion criteria will remain the same. So patients will have to have a smoldering or indolent systemic mastocytosis with severe symptoms and with a failure to optimal symptomatic treatments. The study is planned to enroll 140 patients, so randomized 1-to-1, and the primary endpoint will be the same with a slight modification. It will be reduced to 3 symptoms, pruritus, flush, and depression, and the calculation on the endpoint will remain the same. It will be the cumulative response at 75% on those 3 symptoms for up to week 2024. Now, what is interesting is the optimization both in this new study as compared to the first one. The first optimization is a dose titration. Masitinib is better tolerated in a titration administration scheme when we start at 3 mg per kg per day, and then after 1 month we move at 4.5, with no tox, and then at 6 mg. This dose titration scheme leads to a reduction of discontinuation, which is better for the patients, of course, but also better for the efficacy because the discontinuation is treated as a failure. We have experience, of course, of this titration scheme in other studies. As you know, it's the optimal way to administer masitinib. The second optimization is the recording of rescue therapy. In the first study, patients could take any rescue therapy, introducing or increasing dose to manage the symptoms, which, of course, favored the placebo arm. In the second study, this has been actually a point from FDA when we discussed with them, they said, no, the rescue treatment should be properly defined, and introduction of rescue treatment will be analyzed as a failure for the efficacy, which we think, of course, is a good recommendation that is implemented in the new study. Then there is the running period. The running period will make sure that patients are actually treated at optimal symptomatic treatment, and they are still severe at baseline. This will protect the study for, I would say, potential less severe patients or that could actually respond better. So the three optimization has been validated, and the study can now start, which leads us to the next slide. And the next slide is the status of the study. So we actually have this call because we received recently the IND from the French authority ANSM, which we are pleased with. We have to say that in terms of design, the design has benefited from 2 scientific advice that we did with EMA in the course of the development of this compound. And we have received IND not only from the ANSM, but also from other European countries. And so we should start in Q1 the recruitment. Then in the United States, the design has been reviewed through 1 scientific advice and a recent interaction with FDA. The interaction is not finished, but we are discussing with FDA, and we expect an IND approval. It's difficult to plan, of course, always, but potentially in Q1 2020 for a start soon after. In terms of the planning, sorry, because I forgot to to put you on the slide, which was the regulatory status. So I leave it a little bit, but you could go back to that. So in terms of the timeline, which is the next slide, slide 22. So we expect to start the recruitment of the study in Q1 2020. The 30 sites of reference have been identified only hematology centers, which was not the case in the first study. That's why we expect recruitment to be faster. And the enrollment is 140 patients. We target 5 patients per site, and we think the recruitment can be done in 18 months. Then we have a 6-month time point, and then we think we can complete the study by Q1 2022 to release the data. In terms of intellectual property, which is slide 23, we are protected by orphan drug status, both at EMA and at FDA, which gives exclusivity for 7 years in the United States and 10 years in Europe. And in terms of patents, there are multiple patents, but as a summary, patents protect masitinib until 2031 in the United States and 2036 outside of the United States. Some countries have been granted and some are pending. I would say this ends the section on the presentation of the management of the sponsor, and it's time now to leave to open the session with the key opinion leader, and we thank you, we thank them very much to join this call and to bring their opinion about masitinib and mastocytosis in general, not specific to masitinib. The first person that we welcome is Mariana Castells. So, Mariana, are you there?
She is not connected just yet.
Oh, okay. So we will then give the possibility. Maybe Peter, you want to start?
Yes, sure.
Okay. So
can I talk?
Absolutely, you can go.
Okay. So hello, everybody. This is again Peter Wallen from Vienna, Austria, and I would like to provide a short overview about key problems in mastocytosis that already Olivia also alluded to, and then I would like to provide some strategic considerations concerning treatment, and finally I would like to add some specific considerations concerning masitinib and the value and potential use of masitinib in mastocytosis patients. So as you can see from my slide, I'm coordinating the European Competence Network on Mastocytosis. I have been the one who was putting together with an international group the basic criteria for mastocytosis in all different variants, including cutaneous mastocytosis and indolent systemic mastocytosis, but also advanced mastocytosis. We had a long series of major meetings in Vienna where the definitions and the classifications were updated during the past 25 years. And we also have a good overview about treatment concepts, developed these treatment concepts in part with our international collaboration partners. And we probably were also the first to demonstrate that KIT is a major target of treatment in patients with mastocytosis. So if you go to the next slide, 29, you can see that apart from an increased number and aggressive growth of mast cells in advanced disease, we have also a lot of problems with mediator-induced symptoms in mastocytosis, but also in mast cell disorders. And these symptoms can be detected both in indolent mastocytosis but also in aggressive mastocytosis, and these are sometimes really the major leading symptom in a patient, and sometimes is even the first initial symptoms that leads to the diagnosis. Surely these symptoms are a big medical need. Why? Because usually these symptoms can be severe, can also be unpredictably severe during the course of disease, and need a lot of attention, prophylactic treatment with histamine receptor blockers and other drugs, and they are involving and affecting a number of different organs, including the brain, the nerves, the lung, cardiac system, cardiovascular system, but also the skin, the gastrointestinal system. So practically all different organ systems can be affected with mastocytosis, not only because the mast cells are sitting there, but also because the mast cells are producing histamine and many other mediators that produce a variety of different symptoms. And the symptomatology is probably the major, let's say, driver and the major point to consider treatment upfront in all the different categories of mastocytosis. So it is notoriously difficult to treat patients if they are not responding to histamine receptor blockers. There are some standard second-line and third-line drugs that you could apply, but most of them are causing side effects themselves, and many of them are not at all efficacious in a way to really get rid of all these symptoms in all patients. So there is still a huge medical need to control the symptomatology depending on the mediators or caused by the mediators using new drugs. So in the next slide, I would first try to give you an overview what KIT kinase inhibitors have already been used in order to block mediator symptoms and what the two different strategies are. So strategy number one is just to reduce the burden, the number of mast cells, those that are less mast cells that are capable of producing and releasing mediators. That could be done with many different cytotoxic or cytoreductive drugs, including the KIT tyrosine kinase inhibitors. The second strategy is to block signaling pathways that are downstream of certain activating receptors in mast cells, including the Ig receptor, that could control at least some of the release and releasability in the neoplastic and also normal mast cells. So now, what kinase inhibitors have been used so far? The first was imatinib. Imatinib is, let's say, one of the major drugs that you all know. It's Gleevec, and as you know, Gleevec has initially been used, especially in chronic myeloid leukemia. It has a certain toxicity profile, and it also has long-term toxicity issues that are just, let's say, coming up, and we have to learn more about, but it may be that the use of, or at least the long-term use of imatinib, Gleevec, will be at least questioned. The second one are the second-generation tyrosine kinase inhibitors used in CML. However, most of them have a problem, and that is that KIT-D816V, a major driver in mastocytosis, usually are rendering these mutant forms in the cells resistant against this TKI, including imatinib. So now coming to masitinib. Masitinib is a new encouraging drug that may also block a number of different signaling pathways downstream of KIT and Ig receptor, and therefore has been developed in the field of mastocytosis. As you have heard, there were some very promising results in first clinical trials that we have observed, and I have to say I was at least surprised to hear that masitinib would not be registered, would not be approved for treatment of mastocytosis, at least also in the light of the knowledge that other tyrosine kinase inhibitors were more favorably received by the community. So I would have expected that masitinib is already approved, at that time we are sitting together, but as you know, that's not the case. And then, of course, there was a lot of re-monitoring and re-evaluation that were all in favor of masitinib. Masitinib also has clear in vitro effects and effects in vivo and preclinical models, and that's all enough, at least for me, to say that masitinib still is a very interesting drug and should be tested in forthcoming trial in order to guarantee full approval by the FDA and by EMA. One of the specific points I would like to mention, especially with regard to other TKI, is the toxicity profile. So first of all, as you know, other TKI have a lot of toxicities, and probably we have been one of the first to report about toxicity profiles of dasatinib and nilotinib, that you really have to take care about the cardiovascular toxicity. Again, also with ponatinib, but even imatinib has a long-term toxicity signal. And therefore, I think from all what I have seen so far with masitinib, we have the hope and maybe even the expectation that masitinib is far less toxic compared to other TKI, which is, of course, one of the major pros for masitinib to test in clinical trials in many different indications, also in mastocytosis. Why also in mastocytosis, or why should mastocytosis be one of the key models, disease models to look at? First of all, because, as I mentioned, masitinib is blocking several signaling cascades that are downstream of the central receptors. Second, because it's already shown that masitinib is efficacious in these patients. And secondly, even if we don't know all the mechanisms that might be involving normal mast cells or signaling molecules that we are really not understanding enough about, whatever the mechanisms are, it seems as masitinib is clinically effective in patients who are suffering from mediator, namely mast cell mediator related symptoms. And therefore, my conclusion is I would like to support the attempts of AB Science to further develop the drug, and I would like to recommend masitinib for further clinical testing in patients with mastocytosis. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for your points. Thank you very much. You are honored. I would like to know if Marina has been able to join.
Not just yet, sir.
Sorry?
She is not connected just yet.
Not yet. So she has problems connecting, Mariana. So we'll move to Jim. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Alain.
Hello, Jim. It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for your time. I will put backward the slides for your presentation.
Okay.
Sorry, I have gone to. Okay, here's it. So, Jim, we are on slide 27, and you can go.
Okay. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi, Jim.
Okay. Hi, Peter. So, I am a professor at the University of Michigan, Department of Internal Medicine, and I've been studying mastocytosis since my fellowship for a long time, over 20 years, during this time I have been also particularly interested in the effects of tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and as with most of you, I've been through the journey of imatinib and then the second generation kinase inhibitors and finally masitinib. I have to disclose that I do have consultancy agreements with Novartis and Blueprint, who also make these competing tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and I receive research support from Blueprint, and I'm one of the PIs in their clinical trial. I think moving on to the next slide, I think I only have one slide to talk about, which is the comparison of masitinib with the other kinase inhibitors and other drugs, because one of the drugs that you see in the list is actually not a kinase inhibitor, but it's a monoclonal antibody targeting a surface receptor, inhibitory receptor. because when we are looking into the area of indolent systemic mastocytosis, these are the available drugs for clinical trials. And I have to mention, of course, the disease is still incurable. It affects the younger population of patients who will have to live with these symptoms of mastocytosis for the rest of their lives. So it is, and we all know that more than 50-60% of patients with indolent disease do not find the current symptomatic treatment satisfactory and have a significant reduction in their quality of life. So there is no question that there is room for further drug development, especially targeting directly the mast cell pathways instead of just dealing with their mediators once they are released. So when we look at the landscape, treatment landscape in aggressive mastocytosis, of course we have midostaurin approved for the treatment of this disease. And we also have deciphera compound that is going through phase one trials at this time for advanced aggressive mastocytosis. And avapritinib is also, it is a specific D816V KIT inhibitor, and it is currently in phase two trials in advanced mastocytosis, as well as indolent mastocytosis, as you see in the second part. Now, midostaurin is a multi-kinase inhibitor, and there is some data from the initial paper that was in New England Journal of Medicine that formed the basis of the approval, that mast cell reduction and improvement in tryptase levels did correlate with the symptom reduction levels in those patients related to their disease. And those, when we look at the symptoms, they were reduced all across the board except for nausea and vomiting, which is a major side effect of the drug. Now, there is an investigator-initiated open-label trial conducted with midostaurin from the Dutch group, and who gave this drug to patients with indolent disease, again, open-label. And they also observed a reduction in mast cell-related symptoms, except nausea and vomiting. Now, when you are dealing with an advanced disease, people are often able to tolerate nausea or vomiting, and they are able to take an additional medication to suppress that, because at the end, the hematologic component and the life expectancy becomes more important. But in the indolent disease, having an additional side effect of nausea, vomiting becomes unacceptable to most patients. I have a patient that I can talk about as an example, that he did have indolent disease with anaphylaxis, and he was placed on midostaurin by one of the hematology colleagues, and along with other medications, including omalizumab. And his anaphylactic episodes did improve on this regimen, but he was just not able to take this medication, and he stopped it because of this side effect. So, again, this kind of highlights the importance of tolerability of the drug, and both short-time immediate type side effects as well as the long-term side effects, the carcinogenicity and mutagenicity and other side effects that become important, because as I mentioned, these are younger people. They have a long, usually, life to live, and it does become important to have good safety data about this. And I think this is again when where masitinib kind of differentiates itself from the rest of the competition, because we have more experience with it, and the side effect profile seems very reasonable. Now, when we look at the indolent trial drugs, avapritinib again is a specific KIT D816V inhibitor that occurs in mastocytosis, and it also has an effect on the wild type KIT, but not as strong as the D816V. Now, it is currently going through double blind placebo-controlled study on indolent mastocytosis, and this is a dose-finding trial, and the data has not been unblinded yet. It will be presented at the ASH meeting in December and also at the American Allergy Quad AI meeting in March in Philadelphia. So we'll have more information about the effect of the drug on symptoms. Now, if we look at the effect of avapritinib in the advanced trial, there were some patients with indolent disease that got enrolled and because they were thought to have advanced disease. And in those patients, it did decrease the mast cell numbers and the tryptase levels and also improved the symptoms overall. But we don't have any specific details about, anaphylaxis, for example, and some of the more important, outcomes. I think, we don't have publicly available data on this drug. I think one of the concern about the avapritinib has been the side effect profile again. It does not cause as much nausea and vomiting as midostaurin, but in people with advanced disease, and especially with low platelet counts, it did cause intracranial bleeding in some cases, and one of these cases actually resulted in death. So again, these data was on the intracranial bleeding was obtained in the patients with advanced trial. We don't have any information on the indolent disease on this complication. I do not expect that to be a major complication. However, it does also show this same effect in the animal studies at high doses. So it may be dose dependent, and it may also be dependent on whether the patients have thrombocytopenia. But this is something to watch for because for indolent disease, it may be an unacceptable event depending on the frequency. There are also some reports that it may affect the cognitive function. That's another issue that needs to be watched because one of the major morbidities of the indolent disease is cognitive dysfunction. And if the drug does not help with that condition and, in fact, makes it worse, that would not be very desirable in indolent disease. It is a good inhibitor of the KIT D816V, and we have to see what the side effect profile and the tolerability when the data is unblinded, which would be coming up very, very shortly. Now, the Eliquis drug is a monoclonal antibody, and it does target this inhibitory molecule called Siglec-8, and it does not kill the mast cells, it does not deplete the mast cells, but it does send an inhibitory signal to the mast cell, and it does decrease the activation of the mast cell through this Siglec-8, which contains item motifs, inhibitory motifs inside of the cell. Now it's in phase one trial. I'm not aware of a data that is double blinded placebo controlled, but the company has made it publicly available that they have given it to some patients with mastocytosis open label. It's an intravenous infusion, I think they are working on the subcutaneous form of it, but I don't know if they have succeeded yet or not. And it does seem to reduce the diarrhea and especially the gastrointestinal complications of mastocytosis. They have also tried it in chronic urticaria, which is a disorder of mast cell activation in the skin, and it did show positive results in that disease as well. So that's another molecule to watch out for. Now, I also would like to say a few words about the inhibitory profile of masitinib. It does inhibit the wild-type KIT, and when we look at the published trials, it also decreases the tryptase levels by about 20% or so, and why that might be. We have some data that was published a long time ago when we look at single cell studies in the mast cells. So these cells do carry the mutated KIT, but they also carry a wild type KIT in the same cell. And not all cells in mastocytosis have both copies of the wild type gene. So I think there is still some room for inhibition of the wild type KIT. And I think the decrease in the tryptase levels reflect the decrease in the cell numbers that carry the mast cells, or maybe that signal that is transmitted through the wild type KIT. And of course, in addition to the activation signals that you've heard about, that are independent of KIT that is targeted by masitinib. So I think, in conclusion, I am also in support of the registration of masitinib in the treatment of mastocytosis, and I would like to support the initiatives of the company and help in any way I can. Thank you.
Jim, thank you very much for your speech. It's highlighting for everybody and to put things into perspective because masitinib is not the only product. So thank you very much. Mariana, I think, has connected finally. Mariana, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, excellent. So we are happy to give you free talk. We are on slide 24, and you can start.
I would like to see the slide because I don't see the slide right now. So,
it's on
here
the screen.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's there. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, and good morning. This is good morning in Boston. I'm a professor at Harvard Medical School, and I'm a clinician, teacher, researcher at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in the newly allergy division. We just separated from rheumatology. And I am the director of the drug hypersensitivity and rapid desensitization, as well as the director of the mastocytosis center, which I shared for many years with Jim Akin. And he moved to Michigan, and we're still missing him there. So my involvement in mastocytosis has been through my mentors, Dr. Professor Frank Austin, who initiated pretty much the field of mastocytosis with Dean Metcalf and others. And in 2005, I am the founding chair of the task force of mast cell disorders at the American Academy of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, so that we could have a platform to discuss things from both sides, from the academicians, from the practitioners, and also to hear the voices of the patients. So this was the impetus to organizing this task force. The second impetus has been to actually generate and being part of the organizing committee of the AIM, the American Initiative of Mast Cell Diseases, to emulate a little bit what happens in Europe with the ECNM led by Peter Vallant and all his colleagues, and to have like a counterpart across the Atlantic here in the multiple centers that are seeing patients with mastocytosis and deliver excellence in care and provide clinical trials. And I have been, since the inception of the Mastocytosis Society, the Society for Patients, from the very beginning, I've been one of the founding members also, and I'm at the Medical Advisory Board. So my role in this is to indicate why I believe that masitinib will bring to the table of patients with mastocytosis something new, something important, something that we could actually use to help the suffering of those patients. If you bring the next slide. So The Brigham and Women's Hospital has been a pioneer in basic, translational, and clinical research and mast cell disorders, and we are a center which delivers multidisciplinary care. We have dermatologists, hematologists, gastroenterologists, psychiatrists, and allergists who take care of patients with mastocytosis in an integrative fashion and very personalized fashion. The center provides the diagnosis, management, and treatment options for over 2,000 and more patients. Of those, 80% are adults, but also 20% are children. And children is an unserved and unmet population for mastocytosis. The majority of those kids are having cutaneous mastocytosis, which hopefully by puberty will resolve. But some of those kids do continue to have systemic mastocytosis through puberty and adulthood, and those kids are right now underserved. There is no treatment aimed at them specifically and particularly. The majority of our patients here at the Mastocytosis Center have indolent systemic mastocytosis, and they suffer from the symptoms of mast cell activation, and truly they have been very few, if any, new options for the last 20 years. So indolent systemic mastocytosis remains a high unmet medical need. The quality of life of patients is severely affected overall by the symptoms, and the symptoms include from skin symptoms, itching, flushing, hiving, to gastrointestinal symptoms, nausea, diarrhea, brain, and then also psychiatric symptoms like the brain fog, the anxiety, and the acute episodes of anaphylaxis, among other debilitating symptoms, so that the patients have unpredictable lives. They just don't know if they want to go out and go to a dinner, to a restaurant, to a movie, because they don't know when they are going to have diarrhea, when they are going to be having brain fog, when they are going to be flushed in front of everybody. And so patients remain highly uncontrolled despite very conventional symptom treatments. There are patients who, with antihistamines and some other gastrochrome and some other medications, do have some quality of life, but we really need to look at new therapeutic options and in a balanced approach, because a lot of those patients don't have good quality of life. And we have to be mindful of the potential benefits and side effects of any new approaches. Next slide. So what do Masatinib and Peter Vallant and Jamaican have already talked about it has, one second, because the slide, yeah. Masatinib has a benefit and toxicity profile, which sets it apart with the current tyrosine kinases, and you heard about the potential side effects of the other kinases, and it has a more favorable benefit ratio and great potential to improve the quality of life of patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis. There is apparently no long-term cumulative toxicity. There is no vascular toxicity. And it seems, though, from what the data which has been presented, that the patients have a good impact on neurological symptoms. And so it has a proven efficacy and also improves, you know, a very vexing symptoms such as flushing and pruritus. So the confirmatory phase 3 with masatinib fits in the goals of the patients that we see at the Brigham and Women's Hospital Mastocytosis Center, which is to alleviate the suffering of those patients, to make life easier with symptoms in the skin, symptoms in the gastrointestinal tract, symptoms, neurological and psychiatric symptoms. And we would like masatinib to be a program that delivers, you know, in the quality of life of those patients. So the Brigham and Women's Hospital Mastocytosis Center, which, you know, I directed, but we have at least 12 other participants in different specialties, and Dr. Matt Giannetti, Dr. Hamilton, and many others, Dr. Dan D'Angelo. We intend to look carefully at this and participate to this confirmatory study once the IND is open. And it seems that we could actually provide the next level of treatment and therapeutic options with masitinib to our great population of patients with mastocytosis. So I thank you for doing this, and I will stop here.
Yes, Mariana, thank you very much for your talk and the description you did about the need for the patients. Now we are going to move to Michel Arop. Michel, are you there?
Yes, I am here, of course.
Okay, Michel, you can go. We are on slide. We are on slide 33.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you, Alain. Thank you so much for inviting me to give my opinion about masitinib. A few words about me. I am a medical biologist, and I'm mostly interested in the physiology of mast cells and also pathophysiology and treatment of mastocytosis. I've worked on these topics for many years since my PhD. And I'm currently the chair of the European Competence Network on Mastocytosis, and I will be the member of EDMC for the confirmatory study. May I have the next slide, please? Thank you. So I will underline again what has already been said by Peter, of course, and Jim and Mariana. I will not go in detail through this slide, but I would like to underline again the major problem, which is the treatment of mediator-related symptoms in indolent systemic mastocytosis. Because for advanced systemic mastocytosis, the first-line treatment should be or is the cytoreductive treatment, but for non-lethal disease such as indolent systemic mastocytosis and even smoldering systemic mastocytosis, the major clinical problems are related to the excessive release of allergic mediators by the mast cells. And as it has been already nicely shown by Olivier and other, these symptoms are responsible for many handicapping patients, respiratory flushing, GI tract symptoms, neuropsychiatric symptoms, and others. So nowadays, even if there are anti-mediator therapies, they are not always efficacious, and they are not able to, let's say, control all the symptoms in all the patients. Thus, it is clear that there is still a significant proportion of those patients that are not improved at the best by the anti-mediator therapy. So I would like to shift to the next slide, please. This is a table presenting the current, symptomatic treatments that are nowadays used to try to reduce the symptoms and in such patients. And as it is written in the legend of the table, not in a number of cases, numbers of treatment are not able to reduce at the best the symptomatology of those patients who are sick for their life and we will find a number of different mediator-related symptoms. So I would like to again shift to the next slide, please. Thank you. So, of course, because of this low or poor control of the mediator symptoms that we have already that has been already described by Olivia and Peter and others, there is a medical need for new drugs. in order to decrease such symptoms in such patients. And of course, because it's not a life-threatening disease, we need drugs that are devoid of significant adverse effect. And among these drugs, of course, it has been already underlined that the most promising are tyrosine TKIs, or tyrosine kinase inhibitors. However, not all these TKIs could be applied to indolent systemic mastocytosis patients because they induce a number of side effects and even sometimes life-threatening side effects that could not be acceptable in indolent systemic mastocytosis. I've been involved in the early development of masitinib, and in our hands, it has been clear that masitinib has a nice anti-degranulatory effect on human mast cells, and this is probably due to the profile of the target profile of the molecule, because not only masitinib target KIT wild type, but also two molecules that are involved in the release of mediators by mast cell, namely LEN and FIN, which are pivotal in the granulation pathways of mast cells. And in the masitinib is not a new drug, as it has been already tested in a number of patients, as shown by Olivier, and also in a number of patients with severe handicap indolent systemic mastocytosis. This has been done in two well-conducted phase 2A and one phase 2-3 that has been presented already. And those numerous patients, among those patients that have been treated by masitinib, a number remain on masitinib for years without exhibiting significant adverse effects. Thus, because there is still a need of new drugs to control the mediator-related symptoms in such patients, because the, as told already, the symptoms are not fully controlled by the current therapeutics, we think that it is very important that the masitinib could be developed in such indication, because the masitinib has a selectivity on mast cell activation which is not shared with other molecule, and on top of that, masitinib has also a low toxicity profile. Thus, it could be the perfect drug, or nearly the perfect drug, to control severe handicap in symptomatic and indolent systemic mastocytosis. And we, all the medical community involved in mastocytosis research and treatment, we encourage and support Abbey Science to initiate the confirmatory phase three in such patients. And we hope, of course, that this phase three should lead rapidly to registration of the drug in front of FDA and EMA. Okay, so I would like to thank you again for the invitation and to give me the opportunity to present my opinion about my city.
Thank you, Michel, for your support and your encouragement for the next phase and possibly a registration. Then we are going to open the session for questions and answers. It's under the responsibility of the organizer. So we are ready with the KOA there to respond to your questions. We still have 20 minutes, half an hour.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, that is star 1 to register a question at this time. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Once again, that is star 1 to register any questions at this time. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question today, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We're showing no questions in queue at this time.
This is Laurent speaking. I have received a question by email, so maybe I will just read it and maybe let or other respond. Why do you think the drug seems to work in so many different diseases, yet doesn't seem to have any off-target side effects? So I repeat the question. Why do you think the drug seems to work in so many different diseases, yet doesn't seem to have any off-target side effects? Question for Olivier.
Okay, so to respond to the first question, we made the hypothesis based on the clinical symptoms of patients with mastocytosis that mast cells, and actually it has been known for different groups, may play a role in several diseases, including allergy, including autoimmune disease, inflammatory disease, and most recently, neurological and particularly neurodegenerative disease. So, as you know, it has been known for a long period of time that asthma is linked to mast cell activation and allergy too. So, work mast cells, we may have an effect on asthma and we may have an effect on mastocytosis. But now we have also some hypotheses that blocking mast cells may help in other diseases, including neurodegenerative disease and so on. So by a single drug that blocks mast cell activation, you may have an effect on several diseases. If I take an example like the anti-TNF antibodies, which work first in rheumatoid arthritis, and we know because a lot of inflammatory diseases are linked to TNF production, if you use anti-TNF-alpha, it works actually in a lot of diseases, including Crohn's disease, including psoriasis disease, and so on. So I think it's not surprising to have a drug which target one kinase, which block one cell, which may have diverse effects in different kinds of diseases. The second question is about the off-target side effect. Actually, we all of the side effects that we do see in patients treated by masitinib are not life-threatening in most of the cases, and they are not off-target. They are due to the KIT inhibitions, like diarrhea, for example, at the beginning of the treatment, is linked probably to the blockade of KIT in Kajal disease, and also the role that we have shown on microglia may play a role also in some kind of macrophage regulation process, which may explain, for example, some skin rash, and the inhibition of PDGF receptor may explain the high edema that we do see at the beginning of the treatment. So all of the side effects we do see are probably more linked to on-target effect, and few patients may experience, like for any kind of drugs, some kind of allergy to the masitinib or adverse reaction toward the drugs, which is not specific, I should say.
Thank you, Olivier. Okay, maybe another question in writing that I have received. Why do you think there haven't been more effective drugs in indolent mastocytosis? Maybe a question for, I don't know who wants to take it, Peter, Jim, Mariana, Michelle, Peter, maybe.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So the question is, why have there not been more effective drugs in mastocytosis so far? So my answer to this question is... Pardon? Indolent?
In indolent mastocytosis.
Yeah. So my answer to this question is to a degree, this is surely related to the toxicity profile of the tyrosine kinase inhibitors that had been developed so far. And as we discussed now, it seems that masitinib could overcome some of these issues. And secondly, I think people are always a bit scared about using a cancer drug for a patient who in principle has a normal life expectancy and is otherwise doing relatively well, but is only, to say, suffering from some mediator-related symptoms. So I think this will change for several reasons. The first reason we already discussed, this is that many of these patients just cannot be controlled in their mediator-related symptomatology by standard drugs. So we need more of these drugs. Secondly, I think as soon as patients will realize that some of these novel drugs in indolent mastocytosis can also reduce some of their lesions, especially the skin lesions, more and more drugs will be developed that are both on the one hand effective on mast cells and on the other hand very safe. So I think we had this first phase where we really developed the tyrosine kinase inhibitors more in a cancer-like fashion in mastocytosis, and we had already some successful stories that, as Jim pointed out, with midostaurin, but also with avapritinib, but we also had some of the toxicity issues, and now I think we are in the middle of the second phase, and masitinib may be a prototype, a good prototype to demonstrate that you can apply less toxic tyrosine kinase inhibitors in patients with indolent mastocytosis. So maybe we are now just moving from the cancer indication in mastocytosis to more an allergy-like indication. And that broadens up another dimension because it's then close to mast cell activation and mast cell activation syndromes and thereby also very close to allergy. So I think developing such drugs in indolent systemic mastocytosis will probably also offer new opportunities around mast cell activation and allergy, and that's a big chance for the both the academic community, but also for the company partners. So that's these are my comments. Thank you.
Do we have more questions, Laurent? No. Is there anybody who would like to take a new question?
We're showing no additional questions at this time. Alan, do you have any closing comments?
Yes. So first, I would like to thank very much all experts, KOL from the United States and from Europe who have joined us, and it's an honor that you have taken this time to discuss not only masitinib but mastocytosis in general. And,
Excuse me, sir.
Yes.
My apologies for interrupting. We did just have a question come in. Our question is coming from Gregory Pepin of Daltech. Please go ahead.
Hello. First of all, thank you for that conference. I have actually three questions. First of all, related to the study that was done and published to the Lancet. So I would like to know that despite the GCP issues raised by the EMA, does it seem, according to you guys, especially that the data are still robust in terms of efficacy for the disease? The second question I have is that it seems that mastocytosis has symptoms that are similar to a lot of different diseases that are much larger, seems like Alzheimer's and others. Any particular reason for that, and is it a good base for further study? I know that Mr. Velland mentioned that. And finally, I've seen in your presentation that all of you guys seem to see that masitinib has a safer safety profile than other kinases. Any reason why this one has a better safety profile than others? That's it.
I don't know who wants to address the first question, which is the Lancet GCP versus robustness. Peter, you had part of your presentation on that. Do you want to comment on that?
I really didn't get the question. It's difficult for me to understand you. Can you speak up and repeat the question?
Of course. So my question was, despite the clinic, the GCP findings from the EMA, it seems that the data was considered robust by the community with the publication of the Lancet. Is it the case? Like the robustness of the data are accepted by the community in terms of efficacy for the disease?
Yes. So I would say. It has been published in a very good journal, first of all. So I think that the data are not only robust, but also rather impressive, though otherwise it would not have been possible to publish in Lancet Hematology. In Lancet. And secondly, I looked into the data in more detail. So again, it seemed to me a bit surprising why these data were not leading to approval. So in my opinion, the community would judge this as sufficient to go for approval and to apply for approval. Of course, we don't know the mechanism, and as Jim pointed out, it may be through normal mast cells, it may be through signaling cascades that we in part know or we don't know, and I think that's also part of the work we have to do, and this is also related to the last question that I could understand, namely why we think that masitinib is less toxic. The simple answer is we don't know exactly, but of course there are some considerations and also plans to go into detail. First of all, masitinib may have less targets that are related to side effects that are recognized by this drug, and on the other hand, it may also be that there are some pharmacological or other specific effects or features of the drugs that make it unique. So just to add, because I also like not to say only positive words, the only, let's say, restricting comment here is from my side that, of course, we have to learn from the long term in patients in the real world setting later if this will really apply, but we are very optimistic so far, and we have all this in vitro data, in vivo data, and usually you can already make a prediction, and my prediction here is very favorable. And on the other hand, of course, we will now have additional trials. We must go into these trials just to reconfirm that the drug is safe and effective. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. And on the symptoms, for similar symptoms between mastocytosis and Alzheimer's, I suppose the question refers to the loss of memory because there is cognitive impairment in mastocytosis as well. I don't know who wants to respond, like Marina, Jim, Olivier, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I can again because... just to bring it to a good end, I have to say, yes, there are so many symptomatologies that are overlapping between mastocytosis and allergy, between mastocytosis and bone or skeletal disorders, between mastocytosis and cardiovascular disorders, and some have also similar mechanisms. So signaling pathways are similar, and there are many immune cells that are responding in similar ways to similar, let's say, agents or ligands. So I think sometimes it seems really that the symptomatologies are overlapping. On the other hand, mastocytosis also has unique symptom constellations. And if you would ask me if masitinib could also have additional indications, I would say yes, but again, we have to learn more about it. And maybe sometimes the mast cells and KIT are also involved in other disorders and indications like autoimmune disorders and allergy and, let's say, infectious diseases, because mast cells are very pleiotropic and have many different functions. Sometimes they have let's say, good functions in host defense and so on. On the other hand, they may also have sometimes functions that are related to symptomatologies that we would like to control, such in mastocytosis or allergy. So these are my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any KOL would like to add? The closing, it's better it's you to close than me. Olivier, maybe?
No, as Peter said, we were very surprised that to not get the registration of the drug, because we do see a real and net medical need in mastocytosis in patients with symptoms. With any kind of drugs, and I think it will be good because probably the disease is not as simple as we do believe to have most drugs on the market for this disease. And also through the mastocytosis, we have revealed the role maybe of mast cells in various kinds of disease, and I think masitinib might be one of the players to help. First, to understand the physiopathology of the disease. As Peter said, we have a lot more to learn, but it is a medical history that we cannot say we know everything on everything before you can treat patients, and we have to be cautious. But I think we have a strong data now with a long-term follow-up, with a good safety, and in some kind of good efficacy also in this patient. And I think the drug also might have some unique properties is that we have shown that it may improve the cognitive and depression problem of this patient, which has not always been recognized as it should be, because it's not specific, obviously, but it is part of the disease, and I think we have a good response with the drug on this symptoms in this patient.
Thank you very much. If there is no questions, we might close the session. Thank you again to all the participants, the KOL, and the audience. Thank you very much from Europe, United States, maybe outside of the rest of the world. It has been a pleasure. Mastocytosis is a top priority for AB Science. We've been dedicated to developing drug in mastocytosis. Of course, masitinib is the first one. Probably other will come complementary to masitinib that I hope we will have the pleasure to talk in future calls later. But we're dedicated, and we have a commitment with the scientific community, we have a commitment with the patients, we understand the difficulty, and we have understood that safety is key for indolent systemic mastocytosis. Safety first, reduction of symptoms, that's absolutely, and we hope Matitic can deliver those two things together. Thank you again, and I hope to have the pleasure to discuss and with you again in future call. Thanks.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a wonderful day.